This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, sevillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org, and he joins us every week to talk a little local politics, development, and growth issues. And Brian, we are joined by one of your summer interns, Gene Feraldi, who is a rising fourth year at the University of Virginia studying architecture. Is that right?
That's correct.
And architecture, like, that's a big tent. Are you studying, like, architectural history or design, or what is it?
Architectural design.
Architectural design. And why that? What is it about that? Did you want to do that when you got here as a first year?
I did. I had to apply directly to the architecture school.
It's very competitive.
It is.
All the hipsters hang out there in the A school late at night doing their design project. Very cool.
Too many all-nighters.
Yes, a lot of all-nighters. And you're an intern now at Charlottesville Tomorrow. And Brian, you have her working on a very special project, right?
Yeah, when I interviewed Jean, and I knew she was from the architecture school, but we had a project that was percolating at the time. Because as you know, Coy, we've been using models in Google Earth to help people understand the local water supply. So we've been modeling the different dam proposals at Ragged Mountain, so the Norris Plan, the concrete dam, and now the earthen dam. We found that those models are a very effective way for the community to wrap their heads around something that's pretty complicated. And we wanted to do the same thing with the built environment. And I want to let Jean talk about some of the work she's done building the downtown mall in Google Earth.
And before we begin, Jean, what is Google Earth for folks who don't know?
Google Earth is Google's mapping technology that they've used. And so basically you can see satellite images in this program. And also now if people build 3D models there, you can see the world in 3D. So other cities have done this, New York City, Boulder, Colorado, and Madison, New Jersey.
So you go into Google Earth and click on 3D, and if someone has built that module, I guess, inside Google Earth, you'll see the 3D buildings as if you're a bird just flying in, and you'll see all the buildings will sort of rise from the ground.
Yes, and you can also see it from street view, so you can fly above it and also see it as if you were walking down the street.
So, Brian, what is, when she came in, you explain this to me. How does it work?
The light bulb went off for me, and I knew it was going to be a good match. And I didn't have the expertise from a design perspective to really lay out those buildings and get them as accurate as they needed to be for Google Earth to accept them into the model and publish them. Coy, one of the cool things about this is once you publish a model, it's available to everybody in the world. And we see it as a way to help the community make informed choices about our built environment. So imagine somebody comes in, I don't know, with a 9-story boutique hotel on the downtown mall.
I've heard about that.
Imagine
if they have the money.
Imagine if you had that model and you could drop it down in front of the planners and in front of the public and say, here's what it will look like. And it's a much different experience, I think, having sat through a lot of these meetings with the architectural review boards, with the planning commission, board of supervisors, city council. I see how they interact with these development proposals. And the public gets upset maybe about certain aspects of something. The decision makers try to figure out, is that really a valid concern? But they're looking at two-dimensional diagrams, trying to answer three-dimensional questions.
Yeah. So this would be the first time in the history of this community where we could explore design, proposed designs, and the impact of proposed designs in a 3D environment.
Correct.
So Gene, we're talking with Gene Feraldi, who's a summer intern and a student in architecture at the University of Virginia. Brian Wheeler is also with us. Gene, how does it work? I mean, you've obviously taken the lead on this project. What do you actually do day-to-day, and explain the nuts and bolts to us?
So basically, I am mocking up boxes that look like the actual building and are the correct size and dimension of the actual building. And then I'm taking photographs and pasting them on the front so they're photorealistic.
Wow. So you're actually building the model like you would like a little train set almost.
Correct. And it's to scale. So.
Oh, that's really cool. So what happens to that after you've taken the picture of it?
Well, after I've taken the picture of it, I have to go through the process of photoshopping out all of the people and trees and cars. And then I just place it on top of the box that I've created, and then it looks like the actual building.
That's so you can cool. imagine the challenge downtown, where you have lots of trees on the downtown mall
that are in the way.
You have lots of people, pedestrians walking around, and on the side streets you have all the cars parked, right? Well, Google wants a very clean looking building. They don't want it cluttered up with things.
Yeah.
So Gene, I think, has told me that one of the hardest things is cleaning those photos up, and then you know, the pasting process, pasting it on this box, is relatively simple, but getting the photography right is the challenge.
So then, Gene, you have to take the picture and import that as a, what, a TIFF?
Or
as a JPEG up into Google Earth, and then they have a team that reviews it and approves it?
Yes, exactly. And the review process can take for anywhere from 5 days to 30 days.
Okay.
And so, and I have also had some of my models rejected by the Google Earth team.
Really? What did they say? What reason were they using?
They say, you know, anything from there's too many other objects, trees and people.
Yeah.
As well as maybe it's not the correct height or the terrain isn't correctly.
Yeah. But as you move forward, you really learn what they're looking for.
Exactly.
And the parameters that they want you to work in. So I would imagine it might get a little easier.
It does. It gets easier and it gets faster.
Yeah.
And the photography is a shortcut way to build the building. It's relatively simple to create the box. And then the photography allows you to not have to worry about building the doorways and windows and overhangs and things like that. You can just paste the photograph on there to give a representation of what the facade of a building looks like. And people who are interested in this can go to Google Earth today. They can download that free program. They can see the buildings that are starting to come to life on the downtown mall. Look for Charlottesville City Council. That building is in the mall, the Market Street parking garage. And then we're working our way down the blocks to start filling out the fabric of the community. And the goal is to get sort of a baseline of what is in the built environment today, to allow us to, as a community, evaluate future development ideas.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. We're talking with Brian Wheeler with Charlottesville Tomorrow and Jean Feraldi, the summer intern there. She's a rising fourth year studying architectural design at the University of Virginia. So nobody's done this yet for Charlottesville.
No. The only buildings in Charlottesville that we found in Google Earth when we started looking—
That are 3D. Yeah.
Are, and you can probably guess them.
The Rotunda.
The Rotunda was there briefly. It's gone now.
Really?
It disappeared. That's a story we need to write. but the Rotunda was there. It's now gone. So UVA actually has no buildings represented in the Google Earth model. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody hasn't made them, Coy.
Yeah.
They may exist.
And they are there in three— they're there in Google Earth, but they're only there— As a flat image, like from above.
Right now, you just have the photography from top down.
Yeah, the satellite
image. What we're
talking
about is bringing that to life
yeah.
with 3D buildings.
So you can sort of tilt it, tilt the landscape, and the building rises from the ground.
So what other World Heritage site would you think might exist in Google Earth?
Mm,
I assume it's a World
somebody's
Heritage
house.
Site. Yeah.
Yeah.
TJ's so house on the hill.
That's
Monticello.
It? That's the only other thing around here that's in 3D?
Yes.
On Google Earth is Monticello.
And the things that we've built related to the water supply. So the only thing at UVA, actually, are the water towers up on Observatory Hill, because we put those into the model, because that's where a lot of the water treatment happens in Charlottesville.
So Gene, when you return for your fourth year at the university, I have your senior thesis project for you. It sounds like the University of Virginia will need somebody to design their buildings in 3D and put them into Google Earth, and you've learned how to do this.
I think, you know, a lot of these buildings may exist in 3D models in different silos around the community, right? So I ran into somebody who worked on the project for John Paul Jones Arena. And they said, oh, we did a 3D model of that. And I was like, great, well, just you need to publish it in Google Earth. And that's really the pitch we're trying to make, is to get the public not only to help us create these structures and do the photography. And there's some resources on our website, SeavilleTomorrow.org. You can click on a Seaville 3D button. It'll take you to what we've learned about this process and how people can help. But also, those organizations, those design firms, the University of Virginia itself and the architecture office, if they've got models, this is sort of our public plea, please share them. You know, if you've already built a model, go ahead and publish it.
Yeah.
Because the community, we think, will start benefiting if we can get a critical mass of the built environment in this public place.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Brian Wheeler and Gene Feraldi from Charlottesville Tomorrow, SeavilleTomorrow.org, about putting Charlottesville on the map in 3D in Google Earth. Gene, this is the kind of design work that architecture students know how to do, right? They just may not know that missing step that you can take that model and put it online in 3D.
Exactly. I didn't even know I could put my models in Google Earth when I started at Charlottesville Tomorrow. Brian actually told me that this is something that Google has made happen and made publicly available.
Yeah, very cool. Now, Brian, what an opportunity. I'm sitting here thinking for school groups to involve interested students in maybe making your school 3D. And what a great school project that if a teacher wanted to take the leadership in that to involve the students who are interested in this kind of work, kids are interested in, you know, hands-on model building or photography or design. I mean, a lot of different, you can come at it from a lot of different angles.
Well, and if you think about it, in our high schools already today, we're doing computer-aided design classes, right? The classical CAD technology that people learn how to do, how to take a project idea and render it within a computer. And what we're saying is this is a free tool. It's called Google SketchUp. That's the tool that lets you build things for Google Earth. So Google Earth, Google SketchUp, both free tools, but they're also very robust. I mean, there's a professional version of Google SketchUp that an architect could use to actually plan a real building and house and create the engineering diagrams that are needed to actually build it. So it's a very robust package. It's also free. And there are people in this community. Bob Pinio is a local architect that we've been working with at Charlottesville Tomorrow. He's done all of our designs related to the water supply system. And so you can build not just buildings, but you can build dams, you can build pipelines.
And put it in
roads,
Google Earth in
sidewalks.
3D.
Exactly.
Very cool. That's really exciting. Gene Feraldi and Brian Wheeler with Charlottesville Tomorrow. Gene, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Good luck the rest of the summer and with your fourth year at UVA. Brian Wheeler joins me. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. We've been talking about the exciting 3D project, which will continue here. Charlottesville going 3D in Google Earth. And we just need to tell folks who might not know how easy it is to get Google Earth. It's you just go to Google.
You go to, I think it's earth.google.com.
Okay.
And you can download
it. It's a free download.
Free download.
It downloads very quickly.
Yep.
And you just download it to your computer and turn it on. And it allows you basically to explore the world, basically.
Yeah,
you go all over the world.
It's basically the consumer version of what you see on the news all the time, right? We are so used to seeing this imagery used in national news broadcast. So when ABC News, CNN, they're zooming in on some hotspot or troubled region.
They fly into a city right down to the street level.
Yeah, and you can see the mountains or the
buildings. Google Earth.
That's Google Earth.
Yeah, and so anybody can use that program.
Anybody can use that tool. And let's say there's some major news in Charlottesville. When we start building Charlottesville, our buildings will then be, we'll have a much more attractive Charlottesville when it's on national news.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And that's
not
the goal,
that's
right?
The reason.
That is the goal, right? It's aesthetics.
But
beauty.
But I'm trying to connect
the dots.
You
want to comb Charlottesville's hair, you know?
I'm trying to make the point that people have seen this stuff before, and we have the power as a community to make it better. That's
Indeed.
My point.
It's like the $6 million man. We can rebuild him, make him stronger.
So go to cvilletomorrow.org. There's a new button I put up today called 3D Cville, or Cville 3D. I can't remember which way I said it. Cville 3D is how I said it.
Yeah.
Click on that button and you can learn all about it.
Great. Brian Wheeler is with Charlottesville Tomorrow, joins us every week to talk a little growth, development, local politics. Where should we begin, my friend?
Well, let's begin with water, Coy. We'll just jump right into it.
It never leaves. Oh, by the way, you're talking water. I just confirmed that Liz Palmer will join me next week on the program, a strong advocate of the 50-year water supply plan, and she'll give us her perspective on some of the recent news and headlines and from where she sits, and she continues to advocate for the existing plan in opposition to the Citizens for Sustainable Water Supply, which are well heard from on this program.
Well, and Liz Palmer is somebody certainly we have quoted along with folks from Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan. Those are some of the go-to people for any of these stories about the water supply. Liz Palmer now is on the Albemarle County Service Authority. She was on that. She was appointed by Sally Thomas when Sally was a supervisor, and then she was appointed again by Dwayne Snow. And so Liz Palmer has been involved even before she got on the service authority as an activist with the League of Women Voters.
Yeah.
So she, like Dee Dee Smith and Kevin Lynch, long histories in the community talking about water.
Water. which is the print. It's the issue that just keeps on giving.
But you know, Coy, I was listening to your show with Dave Norris last week, and Dave, you know, Mayor Dave Norris said it's all coming to a head, Coy. You know, in August we're going to get these studies that we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
So we are going to keep talking about this because we need to make sure the public is aware of all this information that's coming in. And one of the pieces that Charlottesville Tomorrow was able to collect up in the past week was what the Department of Environmental Quality in Richmond had done modeling some of the alternatives in the community. It's not often that we have to file a Freedom of Information Act request to get information about the water supply. Usually we can just email our local officials and they provide it to us.
Did you file a FOIA?
We had to file a FOIA to get this.
With, from who?
From us to the Department of Environmental Quality.
What were they sitting on it for?
Well, that was one of my first questions of them. Why are you sitting on this? It's been a year, and we have to go back in time, Coy, briefly, just to remind people that it was Dave Norris and then Chairman David Slutsky, Chairman of the Board of Supervisors. Mr. Slutsky, Mr. Norris went to Richmond, and their quest, and Dave Slutsky described it as a stealth trip. They didn't tell their colleagues they were going to Richmond. They sort of snuck down to Richmond, met with the regulators, who have a lot to say about our future water supply.
Yeah.
And they met with the regulators and said, hey, you know, Dave Norris has another idea about this plan that involves a smaller dam at Ragged Mountain. It involves dredging at South Fork and more water conservation. And that has become known as the Norris Plan. And Dave and Dave asked the regulators to model that and see if it would provide enough water to accommodate the stream flows. And the stream flows are important, an important factor for the regulators, because the permits that have already been approved for the water supply plan from 2006 requires certain stream flows in the Mormons River and the Ravana River.
It was sort of built around that idea of restoring flow to...
It was this balance of human and environmental needs, and that brought the community together, at least in 2006, to endorse this plan. And the question of the regulators was, would an alternative plan still allow the stream flow requirements to be met? And then nothing happened for a year. We would call them every month and say, what's going on? They'd say, well, we're studying it.
They were evasive, Brian.
They weren't evasive.
They were evasive. Well, did they hang up on you?
For a while, they didn't return my call.
Did they do that thing where they say, hold on a minute, sir. I'll be right back with you. Let me put you through to my supervisor, and then they just leave you on hold with some crappy music.
No, they very efficiently allowed me to leave messages that were not returned.
Oh gosh, sounds like a government agency, doesn't it?
So that's why I filed a FOIA.
And then what was your reaction to
your
FOIA?
And they gave us the documents. They said, this is only a draft. We were about to release this to the local governments. And they said, this is just a draft. Here's the study results. Here's our cover letter that's going to go with it.
Yeah.
And it was funny. I interviewed three people at DEQ in a conference call, Coy. They were all in a room, and I had to keep asking them, who's talking now? Who's talking now?
Yeah.
Because they were throwing out different points about this analysis. And... and then after that call, they called back and they said, Brian, there's one other key point we think you need to know. And it's that we had hoped we wouldn't have to send this letter.
Really?
And they said, we think you need to make clear that we didn't want to send this letter. We just hoped Charlottesville and Albemarle would figure this out and we wouldn't have to.
Oh, so that's why they were sitting on it. So because that they didn't want to look like the heavy to come in and look like they were telling local governments what they had to do.
May have been another reason. But the long and short of it is what the DEQ model said was that...
they love the Norris plan. They love the dredging, right?
Well, they said...
I'm just kidding.
They said, you may love the plan, but it doesn't provide you as much water as was identified as the goal for the community.
Right.
The old goal, right? We're having a new look done at what's the current demand.
But based on what some say is a flawed water need analysis. What's that called again? That's
the demand analysis.
Demand analysis.
Right.
It doesn't meet that demand, which the folks said all along, it's not going to, because a lot of folks say that study, that plan is way off. The numbers are way off.
But that's what DEQ was asked to look at. In this alternative, does dredging combined with a smaller dam at Ragged Mountain give you enough? And what they said was, well, it gives you a certain amount, but not as much as you were expecting. And importantly, it doesn't address all the stream flow needs. And so it failed on both those counts, on meeting the goal identified in 2006, and then also in meeting the stream flow requirements.
It doesn't return the flow to the Mormons River.
it doesn't return flows in all cases. They didn't get real specific, Coy, with me about which stream flows, and that information may be in some of the documentation, but I didn't really get into the details. It was just, does it do enough or not? And they said, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, interesting. So that is an exclusive from Charlottesville Tomorrow, thanks to a FOIA that you delivered to the DEQ. Right.
So what does this all mean? Dave Norris, as you said...
But Brian, let me ask you this. What does it all mean, though?
Yes, I thought you might ask that. I think Dave Norris raised a few points on your show, and he also did in the article when we interviewed him. His takeaway was, they are saying it's okay if we change our permit. So there's an existing approved permit. What DEQ is saying is, hey, you can change that if you want.
Yeah.
And I asked DEQ, well, what if we, as a community, decide to do a new demand analysis, and that gives a new number? And they said, well, that's your prerogative. If you want to do a new one,
yeah,
you can tell us what the new number is.
And that's an important point, because there's some advocates of the 50-year plan who are giving the impression, maybe consciously or unconsciously, that our hands are tied and we got to move forward with the existing plan, and DEQ won't allow us to waver from what exists. But that's not the case. DEQ is saying it's up to you if you want to, as a community, pursue another route.
Right, but you got to come back to DEQ and prove it's an adequate amount of water. You have to have an adequate safe yield for the identified time period. That time period for us has been 50 years. That's another point of debate in the community. Should it be maybe 30 years? Should we do a shorter plan that doesn't need as much investment in infrastructure to get by and see how things change over time?
Yeah.
I think our story made clear that Norris took some satisfaction in what the DEQ had to say, that they were open to looking at changes to the permit.
Yeah.
Now, Tom Frederick also said, be careful. Tom Frederick's the head of the RWSA and the person in charge of implementing whatever plan is approved, right?
Right, right.
Tom Frederick said, you got to be careful too, because it may be very expensive to modify the permits. And it depends how much modification you're really going to do. How far are you taking this?
Yeah. And, do you want to build your dam out of gold or concrete?
Well, no, more how much do you want to spend redoing all the things that Gannett Fleming did to come up with the 2006
i.e. a new plan. Demand analysis would be expensive.
Right.
Is anybody doing that now?
They are doing a second look
at the existing
demand analysis, okay. But they're only spending up to $25,000 to do it. So it's not a full-blown new demand analysis.
Yeah.
Some people would probably like that, but it's going to be interesting to see what comes back. City Council and the RWSA will get that new demand figure or a new look at that demand analysis in August. And in August, we also expect City Council to get information about the 1908 dam at Ragged Mountain. Can it be?
Let's rejoin our conversation with Brian Wheeler. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org. Brian, recent news about the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority, just to put a bow on our water discussion, that they laid out their new budget. Is that right?
It's a 5-year capital budget.
So how much, what's that mean for my taxes?
Well,
I shouldn't say my taxes, but what's that mean for what I pay for water?
So for those on public water and sewer, it does have implications, right? And I got to say, I was a bit surprised by this. One of the takeaways is that you will probably have to pay more for sewer. If you're on public sewer, you're going to be paying an increased amount over the next 5 years. And that's because there's a whole lot of sewer fixing up that needs to be done.
Yeah.
All right.
So don't flush as much if you don't have to.
That would be nice, yeah.
Do you flush a lot at your house? I know a lot of people are like flushing.
I'm sure we flush way too much, but we're on a septic field.
I am too.
We're out in the country.
Yeah, I'm not on public sewer. But it's like a new thing to not flush for number one, but only flush for number two.
I like those.
Have you heard about that?
Well, yeah, have you seen the toilets that have the buttons that are one and two on the top?
I totally dig that. That is like such a no-brainer to me. Doesn't that make sense? That you have a one and a two button, and the one doesn't use as much water, and number two would?
The last time I saw that was at a hotel in Nashville, last time I was there.
Where do you get those around here?
I haven't seen them.
Does Lowe's have those? That Charlottesville Tomorrow needs to look into that. Where do I get a 1-2 toilet?
I've not been shopping for the...
I got to get one of those.
What's the appropriate name for these things?
A 1-2 toilet.
No, not the toilet, but what's the word? So you don't have to say toilet, because that sounds bad.
A 1-2 potty.
It's not potty, Coy.
Well, that's what I call it at my house. What do you mean? What's the name for that kind of...
For example... You never can find a package that says toilet paper. You will never see that. Did you ever think about that?
No, even though I call it TP when I'm making my grocery
list.
What's it called? I'll say TP.
What's it called if you go to the store? Bathroom tissue.
Bathroom tissue. Yeah. You know what they call it in France? They call it the WC.
That's right.
The water closet. Maybe it's WC paper.
I'm just saying, I think there's another word that I can't think of for toilet.
For the toilet anyway, facility?
You got me flushed down a hole here.
Sorry, man.
The surprise to me was, Coy, that over the next 5 years, they are not projecting increased water rates from the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority. So on the water supply side, they have been stockpiling enough funding to start work on whatever water plan we come up with. Now, they had to pencil.
They've been setting money aside now.
They've been setting money aside from past rate increases, right?
Yeah.
But they won't have to raise them any further, at least in the next 5 years, is what they're saying.
Oh, okay.
So that story
that's
was
a good thing.
By my colleague Sean Tubbs. It was in the Daily Progress.
The rates to
recently.
Go up for public sewer, but not for
not
water.
Not for water, right.
For the city and the county?
Right. Well, RWSA is the wholesaler, so the two customers are the city and Albemarle County Service Authority.
I gotcha.
So, but the other takeaway, Coy, is that they had to pencil in something for the long-term water plan because that involves building stuff, and that's what impacts your capital budget. So they did pencil in the earthen dam being built at Ragged Mountain. They had to pencil in some assumption. This five-year plan can get updated at any time. So they can update it after the community decides what it's going to do as far as long-term
so
water.
So it may change. So the water rates may go up if they come up with a big new plan. Or the existing plan
or
is the most expensive.
Or they could go down
one.
Further.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, the existing 50-year water supply plan is actually the most expensive thing on the books. And it's the opponents of it that are trying to come up with cheaper alternatives.
And what's going to be interesting to watch is something called the four-party agreement, Coy, and sort of the city. Anytime you think about the water supply, you got to keep in mind there's a cost-sharing arrangement between the city and the county, a certain percentage of who's paying for what. And if you're the county and you're the one growing, which is what the case is, and the University of Virginia, of course, is a Charlottesville customer, they are growing their campus and enrollment, et cetera. But this cost-sharing arrangement is going to be very important as people put pen to paper and figure out
gotcha.
Who's going to be paying for this in the future.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler, and Jim is on the line. Hey, Jim, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Coy.
What's
Good
happening?
Good afternoon. Thanks for letting me on.
Absolutely.
I had a couple of questions from the article, the Progress article. First off, did the plan identify, how much has been stowed away for the water plan?
As far as total funding?
Yeah.
Right.
Let me see if I can. Sean Tubbs wrote that for us. Let me see. Looking at the numbers here.
They've put aside, $30,000, haven't they?
$30 million, you mean?
Oh, I'm $30 million?
Yeah.
Sorry, it's hard for me to think that big.
Those numbers.
They got $5 in the bank.
Here we go. The capital. I'm going to read from the story here. It assumes spending $37.4 million on final design and construction. That's for the earthen dam. So they've put that money in the capital budget.
Okay, so none of the construction costs are in the budget yet.
No, that is
the start for 5 years or
no, that is construction.
Oh, that is construction.
Yep.
Okay, well, my only question is, I mean, I think what they've been building up this fund for what 5 to 10 years now or so, our water rates is. I don't know how much higher they are than 10 years ago. They're many, many factor higher, and they're for some people, they're almost as high as their electric bill. So, you know, was it really fair to the people in our community that are on fixed incomes? Many of them have been paying their water bills for 10 years, and many of them have now already passed away and such. And so they've been paying for this dam in advance of them getting any use out of it.
And well, that's a good question. And I think it applies to any community infrastructure. I mean, residents have
many communities have a lot of public debate on how to finance these major projects, and there's much discussion about whether they should be paid for by future connection fees versus the existing customers and such. But well, I don't think we've ever had that discussion formally.
Well, it gets discussed in these sort of what we call boutique meetings at the Albemarle County Service Authority, the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority. So they do talk about how to balance the rate structure with pay-as-you-go sort of financing with connection fees and whatnot. But they've actually done in the county studies about what rate structure should be in place and what tiers. And do you incentivize people to conserve water and then they pay a lower rate? But if they're really burning through a lot of water and water in their yards, then they're going to pay a higher rate.
Jim, would you like to see more public discussion about how this stuff is paid for?
Well, I've seen it in other communities. I'm also particularly concerned about the 7% increase in our CAS bills when they said that most of this increase was a result of expanding their service. So in this case, the city is marketing gas services to wealthy communities in the county, and it only costs $30 to do a hookup. So virtually all of the cost of expanding those gas mains is put on the existing gas users.
I don't know if this will make you feel any better, but my assessment in going to these meetings for 5 years is that the point we're at now, the new development is paying a greater share of the cost for that development than has ever been paid before. And I think what the community has learned over the past 5 years is that that wasn't the case in when new development projects came forward. Albemarle Place is a good example.
Yeah. It's a new thing for us.
29 North and Hydraulic, that project got approved. It's the size of two downtown malls. Guess what? No sewer capacity.
Yeah.
And there was no agreement in place to have that developer
contribute to
the improvements.
The ratepayers had to do it all.
And so I think the community's learned some tough lessons. This infrastructure has been allowed to deteriorate in many different areas, and now somebody's got to pay the bill for it.
Jim, thank you for the call, buddy. Have a good Tuesday. Appreciate it. Let's go real quick. Richard is waiting patiently on line two. Richard, I got about 30 seconds. Go right ahead.
Oh, come on, Coy.
Sorry,
Collins. Coy, I just wanted to comment on Brian's comment that he says that DEQ has to approve our 50-year.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, did we lose you, Rich? Oh, I think we lost him. I'm sorry about that. Rich Collins, a former...
I don't think I said DEQ had to approve it. I think I said they will have a lot to say about whatever goes forward.
There you go. Okay, thank you. And if Rich calls us back, we'll try to work him in. Brian, thank you for being here.
He expanded at all.
Okay.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.